It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another edition of Bavarian Podcast Works. This is I Need No Name, and today I am joined by Samrin. Hey, Samrin, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. Arsenal's won the North London Derby, but as you know, it's not in Arsenal's hands if they win the title, and City's not going to lose to Nottingham Forest. So my joy kind of melted away there. But it was a good win.
And what about Gladbach?
Oh, No. Was at 0-0 last I left it, and I'm still thinking Gladbach will end up in the relegation playoffs somehow.
One can only hope. And anyway, so the thing that we were going to talk about today is certain statements made by a man who is not the president of Bayern Munich, but who might as well be, because as far as we know, Uli Hoeneß is the most important voice at this organization, and he said some damning things about Thomas Tuchel, and then Thomas Tuchel responded in kind with some even more strong statements, and well, the fan base has not taken it well, the media has had a field day, and it has become, well, I won't say it has become a distraction before the Real Madrid game, but I am going to say that it has become a major topic of discussion. Now, Samrin, do you want to recount what the statements were?
I'm going to paraphrase them. Uli basically came out and said something along the lines of that Tuchel came to him and said that players such as Musiala, Davis, and Pavlovic, the young generation, are players that he can improve. And Tuchel came out and basically said that that hurt his coaching integrity, I think is the word he used, and that he's always developed young players. And if this was somebody other than Uli who was making these comments, he would not even think about responding to them. But the fact that the boss, and I do think he referred to Uli as the boss, is making these comments, it meant he had to say something about it.
And it was like, it was also a question asked to Thomas Müller about these recent statements, and Müller said that he does not give a, well, I can't say the word because of the fact that we have to mark this podcast as non-explicit, but he does not care, and it is not something that he is going to focus on, or is he going to let the dressing room focus on, because they are currently focused on the games coming up. Now, the thing is that the statements themselves, we can debate their merits all day long, but the thing I want to ask is, who does this help, really? Making these statements, Uli Hoeneß and Thomas Tuchel going at each other, what do you think the fallout will be?
You know, for years I've watched, and we both have heard Uli come out with statements which make you question everything, which make you ask questions like, is Uli Hoeneß even acting in the best interest of Bayern Munich? But I'm going to say Uli Hoeneß is always acting in the best interest of Bayern Munich. And even before, with the Harry Kane transfer, he came out and he said something along the lines of, if Kane is a man of his word, then he will be at Bayern. And guess what? He was right. So I'm going to say that as toxic as Uli's statements sound right now, I think there is a motive to them. And this actually came to me when I saw a fan comment, one of our awesome commenters comment in one of the articles about this, where the fan suggested that Uli might have said this to make sure that the relationship with Tuchel ends permanently and there's no turning back. And I think there is some truth to that, because Bayern is wavering a little bit, because I think the latest that I've heard about Ralf Rangnick, he's not 100% like on it yet. He's wavering, although Max Eberl has come out and said that a coach, while not being announced before the Real Madrid game has been decided upon. So that's one thing. So before, by making the statement before the Real Madrid game, he is just shutting the door to the possibility that even if the Real Madrid game goes really well, that the possibility that if the Real Madrid game went really well, then Tuchel, there might be a, might have been a small chance that Tuchel might have stayed. And Uli, I think, does not want that at all. So even if the statement is not true, and I know I'm not a fan of Tuchel, that's no secret, but Tuchel has played Pavlovich an awful lot. Of course, this started after injuries. He's played Musiala, basically, he's run Musiala to the ground. And he's pretty much always played Davies till recently with whatever's going on with Davies. So I'm going to say that Uli knows exactly what he's doing. And perhaps by using this distraction and making the focus on him and Tuchel, he's taking the eye off the team. Who knows? Maybe there's something going on there. I have no way of knowing. What are you thinking?
Well, the way I see it is that Uli Hoeneß is not always the kind of man who tells the truth. He's not always the kind of man who will be 100%, I don't know, calculated in his statements. He might make a mistake. But one thing you can be assured from in c the case of Uli is that his statements will be authentic. So when he says that Thomas Tuchel did not want to develop players, but have preferred to buy new players, I do believe him. I do not take the specific examples of Pavlovich, Musiala, and Davies at face value because, in my opinion, those were just off-the-cuff examples that Uli made. Instead, we can see the examples of how Tuchel has handled the squad in the duration of the time that he has been here, and say that yes, he is the kind of guy who would much rather bring in new players than work with what he has. And he has shown that repeatedly up until now, where he has no choice anymore. And he's now finally started to make the team play the way it should be, or at least it can play rather than the way he wants it to play. Therefore, I think that Uli has a point, and the point being that this is what he and potentially some of the people behind the scenes think about Thomas Tuchel at Bayern Munich, which only he is able to say to the media. That being said, I don't think the statements are helpful because it just puts another target on Bayern Munich at a time when we really do not need any more bad press. We are already in the midst of a coaching search, which is going sideways, and the board has come across as very amateurish almost because they have, well, the way they have conducted themselves in this coaching search, they have basically alienated anyone who would want to work with Bayern Munich for the foreseeable future because they cannot agree on what kind of coach they want at this club. Even Liverpool, who were way behind us in the coaching search just a few weeks ago, have finally confirmed Arne Slot as their new coach after Jurgen Klopp leaves. They found a target and they got him. Whereas we are going through targets like there's no tomorrow. We've gone through Xabi Alonso, who rejected us, then Nagelsmann, Flick, Unai Emery. Who else? There's a long, long list at this point. And Zidane,
Sebastian
Sebastian Hoeneß,
Hoeneß.
yes. Everyone we've gone through, and now we are at a point where we are looking at Ralf Rangnick. And I understand that Ralf Rangnick is not a terrible option, but he's not the option I'd choose. And he's definitely someone who is a stopgap. And I do not want a stopgap any more than I want Thomas Tuchel to continue at Bayern. By making these statements against the coach, at least at the time that he made them, Uli Hoeneß does push back against the Jupiler narrative, which I don't know how it came about, but it has gained enough traction to the point that Derek Ray mentions it on air during a game. The fact that a significant portion of the fan base, especially a very loud portion on Twitter, wants Thomas Tuchel to stay, Uli may have acted to nip that in the bud, as you said. However, by doing so, he also sets the precedent that someone at the club will go on German TV and make these comments about a manager while the manager is preparing for one of the biggest games of the season. By doing so, I think he's made potential appointments much more wary than they would have been. It's not helpful, and I just wish that he could have acted with more tact, But then again, if he had acted with more tact, then he would not be Uli Hoeneß, and we would lose the authenticity that we get from him, which is very rare in football these days. So I am kind of conflicted on this. I am honestly just at a point where I do not feel the need to react to this anymore. I'm just here to sit back and see how it all plays out. I am no longer in the business of giving my hot takes on any more situations. I am completely burnt out on that, and I'm just here to see what Bayern Munich can continue to achieve despite the whirlwind that has gripped us this season. It's unfortunate that it all had to turn out this way. It's been so chaotic because it wasn't that long ago that we had this reputation of being kind of rock solid at the top and at management level. And I don't doubt that other clubs are far worse managed than we are, because it's just that they don't have the same level of media spotlight on them, or at least their managers are, sorry, not managers, their executives are a little bit more tactful with what they say to the media while still being completely incompetent. Whereas I would rate the competence of guys like Ernest and KHR quite like highly. However, they do kind of air their dirty laundry too easily, and I think that is just, it just kind of feeds into all of the eight FC Hollywood narratives, and it's just like it just makes things harder than it needs to be. For someone like Thomas Muller, who has been here, who's been around the block, and he knows how these things go, he might not be affected. But for others like, say, for example, youngsters like Pavlovich or new players like Kim, they might be affected. And since these guys might be very soon playing their first or second Champions League semi-final in the case of Kim, it's not good for them to be embroiled in this level of toxic discourse in the eve of such an important game. That's my opinion as far as I'm concerned. It's a very, how should I say it? It's a very safe opinion. I think, I don't know if anyone will disagree with that, but that's how I feel.
I have a couple questions for you, actually. And oh, by the way, I think this is KMG's first, actually. I don't think Napoli made the semifinals, but
They didn't? Wow.
no, not as far as I remember. I think quarterfinals was where their journey ended. So my question to you is this: what do you think about the timing of Uli's comment? Why do you think this is the moment he chose to come out and say this? Because you and I both know that there's always far more to Uli's comments than what we just hear from him directly.
Well, I think that there may have been certain voices within the club starting to consider Thomas Tuchel a potential option to stay at Bayern Munich. And by doing this before the Real Madrid game, before Thomas Tuchel can potentially win the Real Madrid game and make it to the Champions League final, Uli burns the bridge before the bridge, before Tuchel can cross the bridge, you know? Because, say, for example, Tuchel had made it through the Real Madrid games and made it to the Champions League final, then Uli had made these comments. I don't think that he would have had a leg to stand on. It would have been very easy for Tuchel to say, "You can just look at my record here and now, we are in the Champions League final, etc., etc." And I think the backlash would have been even greater, and people behind the scenes would have, how should I say it, interpreted these comments differently. Instead, by timing it now, it's unfortunate, but it does play into Uli's hands in terms of, well, if his objective was to make sure that Tuchel does not renew no matter what.
My other question to you is this. This is nothing new at this club. This is how things have been for, like, I've been rooting for this club for nearly 2 decades now, and things have not been any different. And even when Hansi Flick had won 6 trophies, even after that, there were doubts about his competence because we were conceding hatfuls of goals. We had conceded like 44 that season. And by the way, Tuchel's not far off. We're at 38 right now. So my question to you is this: why should this necessarily scare off potential candidates? Because anybody who knows anything about Bayern Munich knows that this is very common.
Well, I think that a lot of potential candidates won't actually know what they're getting into, you know? You can say this about the people who have rejected us so far, or we have rejected so far. Flick, Nagelsmann, Xabi, they would know. They would know what they were stepping into, because two of them, they've been in that position, and one of them, Xabi Alonso, he knows very clearly what's going on, like what would be expected of him if he were to step into the Bayern Munich job. Whereas other coaches outside this circle, say for example, maybe Zidane, I don't know if they would be paying that much attention. They might just get the call and say, okay, no problem. Because Bayern Munich, when we knock, coaches tend to answer. So by doing this and the time that he did it, right before a major game against Real Madrid, Tuchel has not, sorry, not Tuchel, Ullie has not only attracted the attention of the German media, he has attracted the attention of the international media and has made it a major topic right before one of the biggest games, not only of our season, but of the season in general in Europe. This puts the spotlight on the club, a very negative spotlight. And if Bayern Munich goes on to, say, for example, lose against Real Madrid, which personally I see as much more likely than as winning for obvious reasons, I don't doubt that Tuchel will take this as an out. He will say it was not helpful to have the club former president come out and undermine me right before I was coaching this game, and it served as a distraction. And I hope that this is not something that I encounter in my next club. And by saying stuff like that, I don't doubt that Tuchel will make those excuses. And by saying them, people will listen and they will be broadcast everywhere. And it will just make the situation at Bayern more well known. And I don't think that helps at all.
I agree with that, and Tuchel will use, anything as his excuse if things don't work out. But I also think Uli would not have made these statements if he didn't think that there's a genuine chance of Bayern Munich actually getting something out of this Real Madrid tie.
I
So
agree.
yeah, that because I think he does actually, which makes me see one other thing, that Uli actually does see the potential of this team. Because if he thought that this team was as bad as, I don't know, Herbert Hainer seems to think it is, or even Max Eberl to an extent, we have to tear the whole thing apart and restart and whatnot. I don't think Uli makes these statements. I think he believes in this team. And that's been the case with Hoeneß for a very long time. He believes in this team
Yeah.
more than those around him do.
As a former player himself, Uli has always been very protective of the players at this club. And I think that shows in what he does to protect them. He often becomes a lightning rod for criticism. And in this case, he's done it again. However, in this case, I just think it was not necessarily a calculated move, but more of a case of just Uli being Uli and just saying what he feels. And we can rationalize this all we want in terms of timing and intent and consequences and et cetera, et cetera. But I think this is the ultimate outcome of having someone high up in the club who is not an easy PR trained person who will just say what he feels like. I think that if other clubs had an Uli Hoeneß, you'd get this similar thing from them. And I think this kind of adds to the flavor of Bayern Munich and supporting Bayern Munich because, like, how often do we actually hear what a club executive really thinks? Compare Uli to Herbert Hainer, who literally seems like he's a robot at times. Which one do you prefer? So I would say that despite the fact that Uli's statement is unhelpful and increases toxicity and could jeopardize the team's chances. Well, actually, we do have to talk about that, whether it actually jeopardizes the team's chances or not. I think that it is a worthy trade-off as a fan, just because, like, I'm so tired of not knowing what goes on at the executive level. I'm so tired of these people at the top just being a bunch of black boxes. And Uli is the only person who isn't a black box. He actually comes out and acts like a real human being, a very annoying human being. Who, if he was allowed to use Twitter, or if he had the inclination to use Twitter, would, God knows what he would do, but it would not be pleasant for anyone involved. Despite that, I think that it is something that we should appreciate while it's still here.
I agree. I think a lot of fans, and everyone has a right to be critical of Uli here, but it is easy to forget that the reason why Bayern Munich has such a financial leg up on the rest of the Bundesliga and is financially so healthy compared to so many big clubs in the world is because of Uli Hoeneß. If Uli Hoeneß does not become manager, general manager of Bayern Munich in 1979, then none of this happens. He's the one who, I'm pretty sure, commercialized Franz Beckenbauer's success. And he commercialized the club. And I think in his first year, turnover, in his first year, profits doubled, something along the lines. And he's responsible for the financial might of this club. So I think sometimes Uli Hoeneß does feel like this is his
His
club. And
club.
it is. Yeah.
Kind of,
He's
he
not.
is his club.
Yeah.
Like, he's the closest
Exactly.
thing to an owner this club kind of has. Like, he is not necessarily, how should I say, he's not the owner in the traditional sense. Like, he's not like he can do whatever he wants with it, but he is. I always mention him as the patriarch of Bayern Munich because that is kind of what he is. He has the last word on things. And the only other person who can really oppose him, who has the weight to oppose him, is Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. And that's it. Right. And if it's Uli versus Rummenigge, it's always like they sort of just cancel each other out, but they are such big personalities themselves that no one else's opinions necessarily matter if they think a certain thing. So even though officially Herbert Heiner is the club president and Max Eberl is a sporting, sorry, not sporting director, the technical director of sport or whatever, the board member for sport, and Christoph Freund is a sporting director. It doesn't matter because those two are the decision makers. What this means for Bayern Munich is difficult to say because it's a structure that you don't see repeated at other clubs. Other fan-owned clubs, like major fan-owned clubs, you can only say that there are two, which is Real Madrid and Barcelona, and they are run very differently. At Real Madrid, Florentino Perez is basically a one-man show. He is a dictatorship. He runs that club like it is his own thing. And at Barcelona, it is a complete mess. Laporta is constantly playing up. He's a politician. He's constantly on campaign. His actions as Barcelona president are always calculated to make sure that he gets reelected and not necessarily to do what is good for the club on the pitch. So those two clubs are run completely differently from what Bayern Munich is. And therefore, there is a certain unique flavor to what is going on here. I've sometimes said that Bayern Munich is kind of run like a family business, and you can see it at play here. The old guys are retiring, and they are starting to sort of disagree on what the next path should be. And therefore, we see this level of chaos and this level of, how should I say, just this level of uncertainty at the club, which is otherwise extremely stable by any standard.
I think there's also the fact that, at least I think so. I don't know. I want to hear your take on this as well. In that, both Hoeneß and Rummenigge don't necessarily trust the people that the club have as leaders right now. So, I think Max Eberl is a complete like Uli Hoeneß hire. Like
Yeah,
he's
he
wanted
is.
Max Eberl for like 20 years, right? But
Yeah.
Freund, I feel like, has a lot to prove, especially after the disaster that was this January. So there's question
Well,
marks there.
Freund, the thing is that Freund is also an Hoeneß hire, and there are like certain connections between Christoph Freund and Uli Hoeneß and Hoeneß's brother Dieter Hoeneß and the Red Bull system and like I could go deep into it, but basically what it is that Freund and Hoeneß go way back. So Freund is another Hoeneß guy. And Eberl, we know that Bayern have been trying to get Eberl since forever. And Heiner, I don't even know what Heiner does, to be perfectly honest. Like I don't think he has any input on the sporting side. He doesn't even know what's going on. I'm surprised if he knows all the players on that squad, to be honest. But I guess he has value. He does stuff. He is the CEO of Adidas, former CEO of Adidas. So I guess he brings connections. But as a president, he's just a puppet. He doesn't seem like he has a say at what goes on.
I feel like Heiner's word. Oh, I did. By the way, I totally did not know that. That is very interesting that Dieter
Yeah.
Hoeneß and Freund go way back. But I think among the influential voices, Heiner's the one that I read the least because there's not much to read into at all
Yeah, it doesn't
there.
say anything.
Yeah. It's a whole lot of fluff. But how much do you think the involvement of Uli Hoeneß had to do with Sebastian Hoeneß turning down Bayern Munich? Because I know he has a great situation at Stuttgart, but he was Bayern 2 coach, and I'm pretty sure Bayern 2 won the title under
Yeah.
him. Yeah.
I think the involvement of Uli and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge has had a role in a lot of coaches turning us down. And it starts with Nagelsmann. Nagelsmann is the one we know exactly the reason why. It's because certain people at the club were not confident of him. And therefore he said, no, thank you. I'm going to stay at the DFB, which is a very courageous decision for him at this stage of his career. Xabi Alonso wanted to stay at Leverkusen, but I have a sneaking suspicion that if we were more stable at the board level, then he might have made the switch. And the same thing goes for someone like Sebastian Hoeneß. If Hoeneß saw that his uncle Uli was no longer calling the shots, he might have wanted to take the shot at Bayern Munich. But with the state of things right now, it seems like an untenable position for him. Like, if he were to come at the club, the accusations of nepotism would just follow him everywhere, and no matter how his team would play. So it's just something unfortunate for him. And there is also the perception at the club that, probably from Uli and Karl, that Hansi Flick is not the guy to lead us to the next level again after his Germany stint, and also the way he left last time, which kind of burned some bridges. So a lot of our major coaching candidates have been ruled out or turned us down because of the situation with the board and so many cooks in the kitchen. It makes you wonder really what Eberl and Freund really have to say in these matters, because like if only these two voices are the ones that really matter, then what is their input and why did Bayern Munich get them?
I don't think it was meant to play out like this, right? I think what happened with Kahn and Brazzo is what kind of led to both Uli Hoeneß and KHR just coming back and having major voices in it. But I do want to ask you, though, now that we've had some time since then, how much of the Nagelsmann firing do you think was actually down to Kahn and Brazzo?
I still think that it was a lot of it down to Kahn, you know? I still think that Kahn was the instigator, and it feels that way based on how he was fired and how the reaction has been from the club. I think Brazzo went along with it. He was convinced to do it. And I think that Uli, I don't know if Uli signed off on it, but I think Uli did not oppose it at the time, which is in itself enough for you to consider it his assent, you know? Heiner, he had nothing to do with it, probably. He didn't even know it was going. I mean, we saw the interview, right? So, Heiner had nothing to do with it, probably. Therefore, the Nagelsmann firing, I still think it was a Kahn and Brazzo thing specifically, that Uli didn't really have much to do with it. And Karl-Heinz Rummenigge wasn't involved in the club setup at the time. He was doing punditry work as an independent after retirement. So, the way I see it, the Nagelsmann thing was still there doing. But it could have been prevented if Uli had the mind to prevent it. So maybe you can blame him for not doing that. Still, I still understand where Kahn and Brazzo were coming from, and I think the outcome is pretty much the suitable outcome for the gamble that they made. They gambled that Thomas Tuchel could have won them the treble where Nagelsmann was not going to, and I think that was a fair gamble to make at the time. And given that they lost their gamble, I think the fact that it cost them their jobs is also a fair outcome. They gambled and lost, and they lost their jobs. The consequences were there. And well, that's it. I think that chapter at Bayern Munich should be closed. I don't know why we still keep going back to it and keep debating about it.
Because I think the consequences are being felt till now, and it will be felt till a new
Well,
manager walks in through the
I don't
door.
know. I think that the minute another manager comes in, I don't think it's gonna be Rangnick. I don't trust Rangnick to really take this team to the next level or any kind of level, really. The minute a manager comes in and just clicks with this team, everything will be forgotten. And I don't think it's going to be very difficult for a manager to come in, a good manager to come in and click with the team, because the team has plenty of talent. And the board, if they want to, they can bolster the talent further because the club has a lot of money that they are not spending for some reason. So if they want to, they can just spend, increase the talent on the squad, get a good manager in, and that's it. Like, what else do you want? What more do you want board to do? If they do that, that's it. That's enough, right? That should be enough, right?
Right, which brings me to asking you this. Do you really think Ralf Rangnick will be the next manager of Bayern Munich?
I'm gonna say that I think it's around 70% right now. But of course, my percentages mean nothing, to be honest. I keep giving out these percentages and they keep ending up being wrong, which is good, by the way, because I always err on the side of the worst outcome being more likely. So it's good that they've been wrong so far. But I don't think Ralf Rangnick is going to be the guy. And even if he is the guy, I think he's going to be sacked by October. I don't think he is, like, there's just too much wrong with the Ralf Rangnick signing. He's a guy who is a control freak. He comes in and he makes demands of the board. And if you start demanding things of this board, when the board can't even demand things of itself, like, what are you doing? And you can't exactly expect guys like Eberl and Freund, who were brought in over the winter to steer the club in a certain direction, to suddenly sit down and acquiesce to the wishes of someone like Rangnick, who is probably not even a permanent hire, but a stopgap until Xabi Alonso makes up his mind or Hansi Flick restores his reputation or someone else emerges onto the coaching scene. Who knows? Maybe even Jurgen Klopp or something. Like, you cannot expect them to defer to Rangnick. And therefore, I think the Rangnick thing, even if he's hired, it's not gonna be a permanent hire. He's gonna be gone in a few months to a year, and we're gonna be back talking about this very soon.
Which makes me question, why do Hoeneß and Rummenigge have so much support for Rangnick, knowing Rangnick's history? And look, I have a lot of respect for Rangnick because I think he really
Well,
did genuinely good work at Hoffenheim, and later at
yeah.
Leipzig. But yeah.
Well, I think because they have sort of like a checklist and they're running down the checklist, and Rangnick is just the next name on the list and they're talking to him. And once they finish talking to him, they might get him, they might not. They've exhausted their options above Rangnick, and the ones below Rangnick are a bigger risk than him or have greater downsides if the plan is to replace Rangnick with someone like Xabi Alonso later down the line. I think the Xabi factor is major here, and it's something that is being lost in other coaching discussions. I do not think that Bayern Munich is looking for someone who is going to be the permanent coach for the next 3, 4 years. We are looking for someone who's going to be willing to sit on the bench for the coming season, maybe look over, oversee some kind of rebuild, and then hand the reins over to Xabi, who seems like the ultimate target at the moment.
Then why not hire from inside? Why not hire? I think Martin De Michelis is actually at River Plate right now, but why not hire
Well,
one of the former players who's coming through the coaching system?
if that's the option between them and Rangnick, you choose Rangnick, right?
I
Rangnick
don't
has more,
know.
well, he has more pedigree, as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's not a lot of
Sure.
pedigree, but like it's enough to be considered for this job. And who knows, maybe they consider his input valuable, or maybe Rangnick is ready to compromise, or maybe this is just Bayern Munich just making another bad coaching decision. Because look, this club has a poor track record with coaching hires, right? Like, it goes back a very long way. In my time supporting Bayern, the decision to bring in Ancelotti after Pep, it ended up being a terrible decision. Then Kovac was a terrible decision. Then Nagelsmann ended up being not so great. And then we know what's going on with Tuchel. So in the end, this club's track record with choosing coaches is pretty abysmal. So why do we think it's going to be different with Rangnick? It probably isn't going to be. And this is probably just another thing that it's just another cross we have to bear as supporters of this club. You're not going to get that silver bullet manager. And if we do, if we get someone like Hansi Flick, it's going to be completely by accident. That's how I see it.
I was going to say exactly that because even Joop came in as an interim and Joop
Yeah.
was not supposed to stay the long term. And Bayern announced Pep like what
Pep,
in January
yes.
in 2013. And then Joop goes on to win everything. And then Pep comes in, changes things. Players are not happy. Yeah, the club doesn't really have a great track
And
record with management.
Pep was one of our better managerial hires. Like,
Yeah.
he lasted 3 years, which
Yeah.
it feels like an eternity considering our
Yeah.
recent coaches.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like this club is just not the kind of place that manages last. It's a bit like Abramovich Chelsea. In fact, I'm pretty sure we hire and fire managers more often than Abramovich did at Chelsea.
We do. We
We
do.
do. Yeah. So then that's a club that is infamous for hiring and firing managers. So I think this is just how we're going to have to get used to it. And therefore, if Bayern Munich is going to be like a philosophy driven club, we're going to have to be philosophically driven by the type of signings we make and the squad composition rather than what the manager thinks.
Yep.
So, given that we've discussed all of that, I want to ask you this, Samrin. What do you think all of this drama and all of these discussions that are being had? Because if we are talking about it, I'm sure other people are talking about it, and the players will naturally be concerned about their futures. What do you think this will do to the dressing room ahead of the Real Madrid game? Do you think that it's going to serve as a distraction?
I think where it might serve as a distraction is the players that Uli named. Because he named three very young players. He named Musiala, who's by now used to some of this noise. He's named Davies, who we can say the same about. And he named Alex Pavlovich, who's just basically, just come up from the youth system. So if anything, I think those three players might have heard their names and that could lead to something, but overall, I really don't think it will. I think there are experienced guys in there like Neuer, like Muller, who's just gonna step in and just, nip that in the bud and just be like, Uli's being Uli. That's none of our business. We take care of business on the pitch. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't think it'll necessarily affect them in a way that we can see, but I definitely think that if we lose, it's going to come up as a topic of discussion, like as a reason that we lost.
Okay, what were the odds we were going to win anyway? So let's talk about that.
Well, I think
What,
that the
yeah.
bosses see it as a 50-50, or at least Averill said it was 50-50. Now, I personally see the odds as much worse, especially since the first leg is at the Allianz Arena, which is a massive disadvantage, and also because of how we just play in general. Even though we're not playing as badly as we did before the Arsenal game, I still think that we match up poorly against this Real Madrid team. That being said, now this might sound very weird coming from me. I think that Tuchel might have a better approach for these upcoming games against Real Madrid than any of our previous coaches that faced them, save for Upangas, because I think that he's going to go in and he's going to try and not lose. And I think that's the right thing to do at this stage.
My question is this then, right? Because Real Madrid basically played against Man City to not lose. How do we know that Real Madrid won't employ the same strategy? And even if we play to not lose, I think players like Vini Jr., and we all know Jude Bellingham very, very well, guys like that are far more experienced than anything that Arsenal's attack had to offer. And Arsenal's
Yes.
attack had a lot to offer, but yeah. What's your take on that? And like, how do you see Tuchel setting up against guys like these?
I can't comment on the specifics of what formation he'll use, especially in terms of the lineup he's going to choose, because at this stage, we do not know the state of Matthias De Ligt and Konrad Laimer, who were supposed to be starters in that game. However, I think the approach is going to be to not concede goals at the Allianz Arena. If we score at the Allianz Arena, that's a bonus. But Tuchel will be just as happy with a nil-nil as he would be with a one-all or a two-all, you know? And it makes sense, but I don't think it is as important as it was to not lose that first leg against Arsenal. Because against Arsenal, we saw certain circumstances worked in our favor. As you said, Arsenal are not as experienced as Bayern Munich or Real Madrid. So when it went to the second leg and they had to come to the Allianz Arena, it was a strategic advantage for Bayern Munich because we had the overwhelming home advantage and the experience advantage at this level, as well as, in my opinion, a decent talent advantage. Those advantages evaporate in this tie because, first of all, it's going to be played at the Bernabeu. Second of all, Arsenal had one fewer day, of rest going into that second leg, whereas Bayern Munich are not, sorry, Real Madrid are not going to have that issue in this second leg. And also, Madrid, if you talk about experience at this level, Madrid probably have more than we do, and they always turn up at this competition. So in that case, I believe that Tuchel might honestly just get his players out there and make sure that they do not give Madrid an easy goal. As long as they can prevent that from happening, then maybe something can happen at the second, sorry, at the other end of the pitch. Because I don't really see Madrid making major mistakes at the back, but I can see our players such as Musiala and Kane, potentially nicking a goal as long as we keep it close. If we have to chase against Madrid, I think all is lost. But as long as it stays level, I think it's anyone's game.
What are the odds that Jamal Musiala actually makes this game? Like, I hear very conflicting reports. Yeah,
I
go ahead.
think that Tuchel's gonna risk it. I think Tuchel's gonna risk it with Musiala and Sané because he has no reason not to.
Isn't that a dangerous game to play when you have Muller?
What does he care? What does he care? He's gonna be gone after
That's.
this.
Yeah, but.
All he cares about is the remaining three games, like theoretically the remaining three games, which is this game, the second leg against Real Madrid, and a potential Champions League final. That is all Tuchel cares about, and he will sacrifice whatever he needs to get those to win those games, or not just win, just to not lose, and then see where that takes him, because that is all that he needs, right? Nothing else matters to Thomas Tuchel at this stage. And that is why I don't necessarily think that the statements made by Ole will also affect Tuchel's planning for this game. I don't think it's gonna affect what he's gonna do. It's all it did was just make him less likely to extend his contract after all is said and done.
Which I can't argue against, that might be a good thing. But I have to say one thing about both Sané and Musiala here, including Gnabry, if Gnabry starts. It's Do you remember what happened to Harry Kane in the Champions League final when Tottenham played Liverpool?
No,
They risked him. He was
I swear I fell asleep in that final. It was so boring.
It was a horrible final, honestly. It was over within the first 5 minutes, more or
Oh
less.
yeah.
But Tottenham risked Kane, and Kane left the pitch limping after 15 minutes. And I think if he goes with Musiala, Sané, and or Gnabry, he risks it happening with at least one of the three, because Gnabry is not match fit. So I don't think, because he's been out for what, like 3 weeks now? So Gnabry is going to be a risk to start with anyway. Sané and Musiala have basically not played, right? Since we played the second leg against Arsenal. And both, from what I'm understanding, are in tons of pain. So I think he, it might actually hurt Tuchel than help him to start
Painkillers
both.
exist, to be honest. And like it's not like he can start anyone else because Coman is injured and Brian Zaragoza might as well not exist. And he's not gonna start Matuidi in a game like this. And the other option is Thomas Muller and Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting. Now, there is one option which has been mentioned, which is the fact that he can put Rafael Guerrero as a winger and Nusser Mazraoui as left back. And we saw against Frankfurt and against Arsenal, they make a good combination on the left. So Tuchel might be able to get away with one less winger if he so chooses. But even then, I think that he is going to go with Musiala and Sané. He's going to risk them and he's going to bench Thomas Muller for obvious reasons. And he's going to make sure his team is set up to defend like their lives depend on it, because it kind of does. Like, if you cannot defend resolutely in a Champions League semi-final, then you don't deserve to win the competition, in my opinion. So I'm not against Tuchel effectively parking the bus, and I think parking the bus tactics against this Real Madrid team would be more successful than whatever the hell Man City were trying to do. And it's less likely to have us in a situation where we would have to chase the game against Madrid, which is the worst situation you can be in.
I would argue with you on the Champions League semifinal point. I think, like, of the past four that I've watched Bayern, well, not the past four. I don't remember the Pep ones particularly well. But the ones under Jupp, the one under Flick, I don't think we were defensively very good, except for that tie against Barcelona in 2013. I think we were pretty defensively against Madrid in 2012, defensively very against Lyon in 2010, and against Lyon again in 2020. And on all of those semifinals, it felt in 2021, it felt like the best form of defense was attack. But again, yes, I know we're talking about Tuchel. That is never going to happen. However, if we do park the bus against Real Madrid, which is horrible for me to even say because Bayern Munich parking the bus just feels like such a foreign concept to me. Don't you think that there's a chance that we'll be beaten and we'll be beaten well because of the quality of attackers that they have? Because I'm just looking at this team who started the first leg against City. And just to pick out some names, Dani Carvajal, Rudiger, Toni Kroos, Valverde, Bellingham, Rodrigo, Vinny Jr. So much experience runs through that side.
Well, the thing is that if you set up defensively, you cannot fundamentally be beaten badly because you are limiting the number of chances that your opponent gets to beat you badly. And Real Madrid, I would not consider the type of team that can really just get all over you and suffocate you and completely run you over. Something that you can expect a team like City or even Arsenal to do. So, therefore, I think Tuchel might actually have a decent chance of success with these tactics. And why I say this, it's not based on what previous Bayern Munich teams and coaches did in their semi-finals. Instead, I base this on what Real Madrid themselves have done in their own Champions League knockout stages to beat teams that they really should not have had any business beating. I know you read this, but I wrote an article on the site saying that Thomas Tuchel has essentially Madridified Bayern. And people had a very strong reaction to that, thinking that I was criticizing Thomas Tuchel and what he was doing. It's not necessarily criticism, it's simply an observation. Thomas Tuchel, the way he wants to set up the team is to win at all costs. And to do that, he has taken the playbook pioneered by Madrid itself, which is to make sure that you have a solid base, you never go a goal down or more than one goal down. And to then let your superior attackers just do whatever they can and let that get you the win. The question is whether he can out Madrid themselves. But it's more likely to get us the win at this stage than for Tuchel to somehow channel his inner Hansi Flick and convert us into a manic pressing side and completely change his tactics for this one game. I do not see that working. So, given the state of the team, in the context of the season, Tuchel's approach may just be the only approach that he can take, and also the one that is the most likely to get us the victory, even though I find victory overall very unlikely. I wonder
How
if that makes any
similar?
sense.
No, it does. It does. How similar do you think the setup will be to the Arsenal setup in the second leg?
If the players are fit, I think it will be pretty much identical. I don't really expect any changes, actually. I know for a fact that Davies won't start. The state of Davies right now, like, I would not start him against Bochum, to be honest, let alone Real Madrid. And honestly, maybe he's doing this on purpose, given the fact that Madrid are one of the teams that are after him. His performance in that cameo against Frankfurt, that was just abysmal. And he was directly at fault for the goal scored by Saka in the Arsenal game. And Mazraoui is in amazing form right now at left back. Same thing goes for Guerrero at left wing. So Davies, I don't see starting. Musiala, God knows how he'll perform. Maybe the rest will do him some good. Maybe it was all gamesmanship from Tuchel. Musiala is not actually injured or whatever. Or maybe he's actually in pain and it's gonna mess up his shooting and passing and it's gonna cause that little bit of slippage that causes us to lose the game or whatever. There's just too many unknowns. And that's why I think that Tuchel's going to take the approach which minimizes the number of unknown factors, which is the defensive approach. And I'm ready to see it. I do not care how boring it is. I do not care if Bayern Munich play the worst football game that has ever been seen by human eyes. I do not care if the referee robs Real Madrid of, like, literally everything, every single decision goes against them, and we literally get a handball in the box and a hand of God goal, and somehow VAR doesn't review it. I do not care how we win as long as we win. And frankly, that's just how it is. That's the state, that's the situation right now. And I'm ready to see anything, and I'm ready to accept anything. I'm even ready to accept Muller being benched as long as the win is there. I do not expect a win, but I demand a win, which, I mean, it might sound contradictory, but I think that's the best way to approach this game. I think the chances of Bayern Munich going through are about 30%, higher than I expected against Arsenal, but lower than what I would expect from any ordinary Bayern Munich team going up against Real Madrid.
Let's talk
That doesn't
history,
mean, yeah, that doesn't mean
right?
I'm saying that it's
Yeah.
acceptable to lose to Real Madrid. That is not acceptable. I don't think it's acceptable to lose to anyone. I'm just saying
High
it's
standards
unlikely
you
that
got
we will win.
there. Yeah, very high standards you got there. And let's
You know,
go.
Bayern Munich, I
Let's.
mean, come on.
I mean, look, I have very high standards for this team too, which is part of the reason why, like, I have spoken about Tuchel the way I have all season long, because
Yeah.
standards have slipped immensely. But let's actually just go back into the history of this tie. So, just, I'm sure our fans already know this, but just some, big hitters from this tie. 2007, I think Roy Mackay scored the fastest goal in Champions League history against Real Madrid. Bayern went through 2-1 victory at home in the second leg. And then 2012, again, penalty shootout, massive. I think Schweinsteiger took the last penalty in that semifinal. We went through to the final, and that final did not happen. Let's just put it that way. Then against Pep, there was a battering, just what was
Yeah.
it, 5-0 on aggregate in 2014. And then again, we came back to Real Madrid under Ancelotti, I'm pretty
Yes.
sure. And that was very narrow, right? That was the one
It
where
was
Vidal got sent off.
that was the robbery by Victor Kassai. The fact that I still remember the referee's name after all these years tells you a lot.
So tell us more about that one, actually, and what happened?
What can I say about that one? The first leg was a complete mess by us. We completely threw it away because we
Yeah,
went
we
1-0 up
did.
and then we were handed the penalty to get it 2-0 up, and then somehow Vidal steps up and misses. Like, what?
And then
What?
get sent off.
What? No, then he doesn't get sent off. He gets sent off
Oh,
in the
wait,
second
Javi
leg.
Martinez. Yeah,
No. And
yeah.
then look, in the second leg, we go to the Bernabeu, and then Real Madrid. So annoying because Carvajal, sorry, not Carvajal, Casemiro should have been sent off like 10 times in that tie, and then Vidal is sent off for a challenge that should not even have been a yellow card, and then it goes to extra time. We fight and fight and fight and make sure that it gets to extra time. We literally won in normal time at the Bernabeu with 10 men, and then Cristiano Ronaldo comes in and shamelessly scores multiple offside goals, and then
I
like.
know, two, not even one, two,
Yeah,
which
two
VAR would have
offside
taken a
goals.
second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to say. Second time we faced Real Madrid quite a few times in those days. Like the next
Yeah.
one was again under Joep Heynckes the next season in the
Yep.
semifinals, and there was like so there were I can't even list the
That
number of
was
injuries. I think everyone was
insane.
injured. Like the first leg, Robin gets injured within. First of all, we had Robin starting. I think he was like 70 years old by then, and he started, and he gets injured within like 5 minutes, and you have to move Muller to the wing, and it's so insane. And then like we still fight, and we still lose. And you know what the underlying similarity was in those two legs? We messed up the first leg, both of which were at the Allianz Arena, and then we fought back at the Bernabeu.
Yeah.
We've shown that we can win at the Bernabeu, but we keep losing at the Allianz Arena, and those were the days of away goals. So it was like essentially digging ourselves out of a hole. Like it was impossible to
Every
dig
single
ourselves out of that
time.
hole, but we came very close. Marcelo even admitted in that second leg that we should have had a handball that wasn't given. Again, VAR might have solved that. Who knows what VAR will do? I am expecting a massive robbery.
Imagine.
Like Clement
Imagine.
Turpin has been
Yeah.
announced as a referee, and he's someone that Bayern Munich do not like. I believe we have complained about him in the past.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not looking good. But if we can stand to not mess up the first leg, then fine. It would be an improvement on those two. At the
You
at
know
most,
what?
I just want
Yeah.
the team to focus on the factors they can control. Like we always make mistakes that are within our control, like Rodri scoring the opening goal for City last year. Like, so many
You
things. Like
know
Mbappe
what?
scoring within 5 minutes under Hansi Flick in the
Oh
PSG
my
tie,
goodness.
or
Yeah.
the Villarreal game where Nagelsmann just
Nagelsmann, let's put it that way.
Nagelsmann did his thing. Like we always seem to be our own worst enemy, and against Real Madrid, they always know how to capitalize. So for once, I would like to be beaten by the opposition rather than by Bayern Munich.
You know what? The 2018 one, that I think was the one under Joep Heynckes. What I'll always remember is that Karim Benzema goal in the second leg. Because
Oh
Finn
yes,
Ulreich
Finn
had such a
Ulreich
wonderful season,
season.
and he made the worst mistake, and that was literally the goal that pushed Madrid over. Because we scored two away goals, so we kind of canceled out their two away goals in the home leg at the Allianz, and that goal proved to be the decider, basically, in pushing Madrid through, because it just came from such a horrendous mistake.
Yeah,
So
that's the thing
there's,
we need to avoid. And I think that's why I think Tuchel might be, I don't know. I don't know what in my brain tells me that Tuchel might be the guy to keep us from making mistakes when Jupp Heynckes himself couldn't do it. But who knows? Maybe the circumstances might feed into it. Maybe the fact that we are at our bottom level. Maybe the fact that we have our backs to the wall. Maybe all the controversy surrounding the club might galvanize them, make the team, I don't know, make the team focus in a way that they have not focused in Champions League ties in the past.
And to your point in about messing up the first leg, the 2012 worked out mainly because we won the first leg 2-1.
Yeah.
And we went down very quickly within the first 10 minutes in Madrid. But and even in 2007, we lost the first leg 3-2 in Madrid in the away goals days.
Yeah.
And so, we actually had a sort of kind of mini advantage coming into the second leg, score
Yeah.
one and the tie's over, basically. So I do want to ask you this, and now Delish is a big doubt for this one, according to Delish himself. So if Kim Min-jae steps into the game, how much of a difference do you expect in the back line, in the way that it worked out against Arsenal
Big
versus how
difference
it might work out? Yeah,
because
me too. Yeah.
Delict, well, Kim has not had much game time with Eric Dier, and also Kim, based on his performance against Frankfurt, he's still out of it. He's still not all like he's not regained his form yet. And part of that is down to his benching by Thomas Tuchel. It seems that it has affected him mentally. So if Dier is not healthy, oh man. Sorry, not Dier. De Ligt is not healthy. Oh man. We are done. We are. It's not good. Maybe Kim might step up. Maybe he'll show why he's such a good center back and demonstrate on the biggest stage. But that's unlikely, right? That's very unlikely. So I'm just gonna have to predict based on what is likely, and what is likely to me is a Real Madrid win. They have more rest coming into this. They have better recent results. They have better pedigree in this competition, which is pretty much the only team that can say that. And well, it's Real Madrid. Like, what can you do sometimes? You can just sort of, you need a lot of things to go in your direction. You need luck. You need the tactics on the day. You need the strategy itself. The player performances, everything needs to go your way for you to win against them in the Champions League. So the chances that will happen, especially in the season where we have not been very good on a day-to-day basis, I just don't see it.
I have one more question to ask you, actually, and based off of that, is there a chance that Goretzka plays center back and Tuchel
Yeah,
reshuffles the midfield?
I was thinking about that, but it's very unlikely simply because we have not seen a Laimer Pavlovic midfield before, and there's also a decent chance that Laimer might be injured.
So let's take one last shot at this, right? Let's say Laimer is injured. Let's say Matthijs de Ligt is out. What do you predict the lineup to be?
I will predict Harry Kane up top with Guerrero, Musiala, Sané behind him, then Goretzka, Pavlovic in midfield, then at the back we'll have Mascherano, Dier, Kim, and Kimmich. And then at goalkeeper, Manuel Neuer. I think that's going to be the lineup if those aforementioned players are injured. If they're not injured, then expect a lineup similar to the one we saw against Arsenal.
I think there's a bigger chance of seeing Goretzka at center back than we think, just because we've seen that when Tuchel does not trust players, he does not trust them at all. For all the laughing and joking that he does with Thomas Muller on the sidelines, there is never a Champions League game aside from Lazio that feels like a Muller game. So I think Seiler had said that that was like basically one game where Tuchel just shut off his brain. He remembered he had Muller available on the bench and he decided to use Muller from the start. But I think I don't like, just judging by what I've seen from Tuchel, I really do think that if Matthijs de Ligt does not make it, we will see Goretzka at center back, because I think Tuchel has much more faith in Pavlovich coming good in a game than he does in Kim Min-jae, just based off of the way that he has used his players, which would be insane,
I think that is
but yeah, go ahead.
fair, though. I think that's fair. And I think we can leave it there, honestly. I think we've said everything that needs to
Yeah.
be said in terms of this game going into it, and we will have a more in-depth preview anyway. We talk about tactics and lineups in on our blog and also on this podcast, which is going to be our preview show. So stay tuned for that.
Yep. And anything else on your mind that you would like to cover for today?
I do not think so. I think my mind is absolutely tapped out, and I think it's
With
time
all
for
that
our outro.
negativity.
I
Actually,
mean,
you've been quite positive
yeah, I've been
lately,
very
hand it
positive by my standards.
to you. I have been more negative than you today. But as always, everyone, thank you so much for listening. This has been I Need No Name and Samrin. Be sure to stay tuned to Bavarian Podcast Works for all of your up-to-date coverage on Bayern Munich in Germany. Follow us on Twitter at BavarianFBWorks, at Bavarian Podcast, at The Barrel Blog, at BFW Seiler, at BFW Inn, that's Inn with three N's, and more. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Yep, thank you for listening.